It's 6 hours, Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa, coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Vice President Biden says Malaysian airliner was blown out of the sky over Ukraine and Israel carrying out a ground offensive in Gaza. I'm Bill Michaels reporting from Washington. U.S. Vice President Joe Biden says a Malaysian passenger jet was blown out of the sky over eastern Ukraine Thursday and did not crash by accident. Mr. Biden offered help in investigating the incident.
I offered President Poroshenko the help of our expertise, our National Transportation Safety Group, and other experts in the community. He accepted that help, and they will be on their way rapidly to see if we can get to the bottom of this.
VOA's Defense Department correspondent Jeff Seldon says U.S. officials confirmed the plane was hit by a missile, but that it's not clear who fired the missile or whether it came from a Russian or Ukrainian territory. The official says the plane likely was targeted deliberately by someone who may have mistaken it for a military transport plane. The Boeing 777 with 298 passengers and crew on board was flying from Amsterdam to Kuala Lumpur. It crashed in eastern Ukraine's Donetsk region. There are no survivors. Most of the passengers were Dutch. This is the second major tragedy for Malaysia Airlines this year. Malaysia Airline flight MH370 was traveling from Kuala Lumpur to Beijing on March 8th when it disappeared with 239 people on board. Western military officials are sounding new alarms over the increasing amount of heavy and sophisticated weaponry ending up in the hands of Russian-backed separatists in Ukraine. Jeff Seldon has more from the Pentagon.
Onlookers scramble, trying to capture the roar of rockets in amateur video posted on the internet. NATO officials say the video is part of a growing stream of evidence of Russian escalation and that it shows a Russian Grad rocket launcher aiming at targets inside Ukraine. At the Pentagon, spokesman Colonel Steve Warren.
It is a buildup that involves heavy weapons and sophisticated weaponry. Specifically, we've seen armor, we've seen artillery.
He says it's vastly different from Moscow's public calls for stability.
Their actions do not support those words.
Ukraine's military has asked for more help from Western allies, but so far, the United States and NATO have limited that assistance to non-lethal aid. Jeff Seldon, The Pentagon.
Israel has launched a ground offensive in the Gaza Strip aimed at halting Palestinian rocket attacks after 10 days of intense fighting between Israel and Hamas. The office of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said he instructed the country's military to begin the operation late Thursday with the goal of destroying terror tunnels leading from Gaza to Israel. A statement said the aim of the operation is to bring peace to Israeli citizens and to strike a serious blow to Hamas, which controls the Gaza Strip. Israel says it's in the process of carrying out a combined air and land campaign with naval support. News reports say all power was cut in Gaza City in the northern part of the coastal enclave as of late Thursday. Hamas said Israel will suffer terrible consequences for carrying out the offensive. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon responded to the operation by urging Israel to do more to prevent Palestinian civilian casualties. U.S. State Department spokesperson Jen Psaki says the United States is committed to a ceasefire.
Of course, our focus in the immediate term is achieving a successful ceasefire that will bring an end to the violence, bring an end to the civilian casualties. That's what our focus is on right now.
Earlier Thursday, the Israeli military said it stopped an attempted attack by 13 Hamas gunmen who tried to enter southern Israel through a tunnel. The Italian Navy, over the past 24 hours, has intercepted at least 1,400 refugees on boats crossing the Mediterranean from North Africa. They are seeking asylum in Europe. Their numbers are growing. Suspected Boko Haram militants have kidnapped a German development worker in Nigeria and two children of a Muslim cleric in Cameroon. The abductions earlier this week come 3 months after the group abducted 200 Nigerian schoolgirls. And after allegations of fraud at a number of polling stations in Indonesia, officials are conducting a revote and launching an investigation. Reporting from Washington, I'm Bill Michaels, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, July 18th, and here are some of the stories we are following. Libya appeals to the United Nations to help build a functioning government.
What we are calling for is a stabilization and institution building mission, mainly experts who can train Libyans on the site.
Mohamed Abdulaziz is Libya's foreign minister. Zimbabwe's president accuses Britain of sponsoring Zimbabweans to seek asylum in London. Somalia's agriculture minister says the country is suffering from drought. And Nigeria takes steps to revive its railway system.
The federal government, under its strategic plan, particularly in its efforts to resuscitate the railway system, has developed a 25-year vision plan for the country.
Idris Audu Umar is Nigeria's transport minister. A UN commission adopts new food standards, and vapor collection is transforming Maasai water harvesting in Kenya. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Libya's foreign minister has painted a bleak picture of the situation in his country, warning that Libya could become a failed state without international assistance. From the United Nations, VOA's Margaret Bashir has more.
Libyan Foreign Minister Mohamed Abdulaziz appealed to the UN Security Council Thursday, saying Tripoli needs help to protect its oil fields and build functioning government institutions. The minister was adamant, however, that this would not involve military intervention.
What we are calling for is a stabilization and institution building mission, mainly experts who can train Libyans on the site in relation to building the military, building the police, building the intelligence establishment, at the same time helping us with a security strategy that will protect our oil fields, because, you know, 98% of the income of Libya comes from the oil.
He asked that this assistance be under United Nations auspices, but said if the UN could not provide it, Libya would seek it through regional or bilateral arrangements. The UN already has a small political support mission in Libya. UNSMIL was established in 2011 at the request of the transitional government to assist on several fronts, including political affairs, human rights, transitional justice, and demobilization. It has just over 200 personnel in Libya, but on Monday had to temporarily relocate most of them outside the country due to the recent escalation in fighting that has seen both the Tripoli and Benghazi airports close. Foreign Minister Abdulaziz also noted that over the past year, oil production has dropped from 1.5 million barrels per day to between 150 and 300 barrels daily, costing the government some $30 billion in lost revenue. He said the government does not have the tools necessary to handle militants who have taken control of the country's main resource. He warned that there are many indications that Libya is headed toward becoming a failed state and that the Security Council should engage more effectively to prevent that happening.
Should Libya become a failed state, kidnapped by radical groups and warlords, the consequences will be far-reaching and perhaps could be beyond control.
He cautioned that Libya could become a hub for religious radicals and extremists, especially in the lawless east of the country. In the past week, the country has seen some of its fiercest fighting since the toppling of dictator Muammar Gaddafi in 2011. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe has accused Britain of sponsoring Zimbabweans to seek asylum in London so as to tarnish his image. Thomas Chiripasi of VOA Zimbabwe Service reports from Harare.
Officiating at the burial of national hero Major General Elia Bandama at the National Shrine today, President Mugabe said London sponsored thousands of Zimbabweans to seek asylum in its territory as an attempt to portray his Harare government in bad light following the chaotic land grabs that displaced thousands of former white commercial farmers and their employees. His ruling ZANU-PF party has argued over the years that it embarked on the land reform program to correct colonial imbalances. There was no immediate reaction to Mr. Mugabe's remarks from London or its Harare embassy, a speech which he did not present at the Heroes Acre, accused the West, especially America, of continuing to be hostile to Harare. Mr. Mugabe charged that the Obama administration's hostility to the country has deepened to include food and medicine sanctions following the United States' recent renewal of the restrictive measures imposed on him and his inner circle. However, Mr. Mugabe said Harare is working hard to ensure food security in the country through its new economic blueprint, the Zimbabwe Agenda for Sustainable Socio-Economic Transformation, or ZIM Asset. Turning to the deceased, Mr. Mugabe described Major General Elia Bandama as a dedicated cadre who sacrificed his life for the liberation of the country. He noted in off-the-cuff remarks that only those with Liberation War credentials will be buried at the National Shrine.
It that you did in life to deserve to lie here. So let it be known here at this sacred shrine that the act of conferring the hero status on men and women who rest here comes, yes, from the voluntary choice of and commitment to a hard, dangerous, and uneasy life of struggle right up to the bitter end.
Mr. Mugabe also announced that Bandama was promoted from the post of Brigadier General to that of Major General a day before he died. He succumbed to cancer last week Friday and was declared a national hero by the ZANU-PF Politburo. He's survived by his wife Winnie and four children. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Nigeria's transport minister says President Goodluck Jonathan's government has allocated funds and is implementing strategic plans to revitalize the country's railway system, which has been in a poor state for decades. Senator Idris Audu Umar says the government has developed a 25-year plan to boost the railway system to improve the transport of goods and services across the country. Umar tells reporter Peter Clotty that there is a continuing effort to ensure a strong public-private partnership to improve other aspects of the transportation sector.
The federal government, under its strategic plan, particularly in its efforts to resuscitate the railway system, has developed a 25-year vision plan for the country. And this vision plan is being pursued assiduously in order to resuscitate the rather comatose rail system.
What about the infrastructural development to improve the railway system? Because, as you said, it's comatose.
In the area of railway in particular, before the coming into being of the administration of Dr. Goodluck Ebele Jonathan in 2011, the trains were not moving from Lagos to Kano. So the administration now decided as a matter of policy that it will rehabilitate all the existing narrow gauge rail lines. We have a total distance of 3,505 kilometers of the existing narrow gauge rail line. And I can confirm to you that over 90% of the existing narrow gauge rail line, that is 3,505 kilometers, are being rehabilitated. Some have been completed, others are very, very advanced stage of completion of the rehabilitation. So for the Lagos Kano, which is the western wing, it has been completed, and services resumed in December 2012. So as it is today, the trains are back on track from Lagos to Kano, Lagos to Ibadan, Lagos to Ilorin, Lagos to Mina, Lagos to Kaduna, in that order. We are working assiduously to complete the rehabilitation of the track from Port Harcourt to Maiduguri.
There are concerns that the government has not particularly been good at maintaining and running projects of such nature. And how do you intend resolving this issue of lack of maintenance?
The Nigerian Railway Corporation has worked out a scheme, and in fact they have even appointed a consultant who is working out the framework for the involvement of the private sector to outsource most of the services, particularly in the area of maintenance of coaches and wagons, and even the maintenance of the track itself. It intends to sign an agreement with a private sector company that will be maintaining even the track from Lagos to Kano, and then eventually from Port Harcourt to Maiduguri.
There were issues of security on the railway lines. People say that in the 80s and 90s, people used to ride on the train and all that, but people got scared because of highway robbery.
We've taken proactive measures now. We know there is a detachment of the Nigerian police that is called the Nigerian Railway Police. You'll see that in each coach, you have one or two policemen attached to every coach. And the idea is to maintain internal security even within the coaches, and then in every railway station.
Senator Idris Audu Umar is Nigeria's transport minister. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Abuja. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, July 18th. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 16 minutes past the hour. New food safety standards were adopted this week following a three-day UN-sponsored meeting in Geneva. The recommendations set new levels for contaminants in infant formula and rice. VOA's Jody Kapua reports.
The Codex Alimentarius Commission is the name given to the UN Food Safety Panel. This week, 700 delegates from 170 countries met to help ensure safer and more nutritious food. Tom Hyland is in charge of the commission.
Food is important for all of us. Without food, we wouldn't be living. So all of us expect food to be safe and of good quality, especially nowadays when food comes from everywhere around the world. So the Codex Alimentarius Commission sets internationally harmonized food standards for food safety and also for food quality.
The commission is jointly run by the Food and Agriculture Organization and the World Health Organization.
Unfortunately, lead is an environmental contaminant, and it gets into the formula through the raw material that is used to produce it. And it is very difficult to exclude totally that any lead gets in. But new technology allowed us to roughly halve the amount of lead that we recommend now that can still be in the formula.
The latest recommendations include setting new maximum acceptable levels of lead in infant formula. Hyland says it's nearly impossible to remove all lead from the product at this time.
Unfortunately, lead is an environmental contaminant, and it gets into the formula through the raw material that is used to produce it. And it is very difficult to exclude totally that any lead gets in. But new technology allowed us to roughly halve the amount of lead that we recommend now that can still be in the formula.
Lead contamination does not cause an immediate health threat, like a virus or bacteria might. However, it can have longer-term consequences.
Especially for infants, lead causes damage to brain development and may especially impede the capacity to learn, intelligence, and so on. So long-term effect, very harmful for brain development in infants.
The maximum level of lead now recommended is 0.01 milligrams per kilo of infant formula, half of what it used to be. The commission also announced new recommendations for rice. There's growing concern about arsenic levels found in the food staple.
We have an environmental contaminant that is present all over the world and especially present in high levels in the groundwater. Now, rice in particular can take up more arsenic than other crops. And as a staple food for millions of people, it can contribute significantly to arsenic exposure, which is detrimental to human health.
Hyland says long-term exposure can cause cancer, skin lesions, developmental problems, heart disease, and damage to the nervous system and brain. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Somalia's government Thursday declared its first official drought in the country. It has set up a drought relief fund and made available $500,000 to handle all emergency responses. Agriculture Minister Abdi Ahmed Mohamed tells VOA Somali Service another purpose of the fund is to avoid the food shortage that Somalia witnessed in 2011.
Today, the Council of Ministers has resolved that a committee at the ministerial level should be established to handle all the issues related to the drought that is currently indicated in various parts of the country. This emergency response committee is composed of seven ministers, and its first task will be to undertake an assessment of the current situation and plan for a response that is adequate to the needs of the communities affected by the drought. the government will cooperate very closely with the international community that has already launched its appeal for this year, 2014. Unfortunately, the response for this appeal has been only 25%, and we think that this stand by the government at the declaration of today will also support these efforts by the international community to help the Somali people. The purpose of this government measure is to avoid the situation that we have witnessed back in 2011 and enable our various institutions to be ready for any swift action to support and assist those affected by this current drought. This committee will also engage with the Somali community at large, particularly with the business community and the diaspora, to fundraise for the programs of emergencies that will be established.
That was Somali Agriculture Minister Abdi Ahmed Mohamed speaking with VOA Somalia Service. The Maasai people of Kenya are known for their cattle herding and nomadic lifestyle, but it's an existence that depends on access to adequate water for their herds and flocks. In the village of Kiserian, the Maasai community is embracing a new water harvesting technology with marked results. As Neni Ruvaga reports for VOA, it's called a fog collector.
Early morning in Kiserian, a town 30 kilometers from Nairobi. The Lotuno family go about their daily chores with their matriarch, Hannah, checking on the health of her flock.
I wake up as early as 5 a.m. to tend to the cattle before they're taken out to pasture. I then check on the sheep's health, and I tend to the sickly ones. For them to be productive, they need lots of water.
Kiserian is dominated by Maasai cattle herders. During dry spells, they must go far to find enough water and pasture for their animals. Anthony Perkay is a community organizer who says lack of water is a major issue.
We experience a lot of problems because we depend on livestock in our livelihood. So when this drought, our cattle die up as a result of this no water. And this area where we live is Kajiado County. We experience a lot of drought during the year as a result of climate change.
But the problem now has a solution, the fog catcher. Professor Bansi Mati from the Jomo Kenyatta University of Agriculture and Technology developed her variation of the device last year. The fog collectors look like tall volleyball nets slung between two poles, but they are made of a polypropylene or polyethylene mesh that is especially efficient at capturing water droplets. When the fog rolls in, the tiny droplets of water cling to the mesh, and as more and more cluster together, they drip into a gutter below that channels the water to a water tank.
Fog is water, but very few people treat it as water because fog is a cloud that is touching the ground and small droplets of water. The need to collect fog is because fog season follows the rainy season. So the fog season, that water, instead of letting it go to waste, it is possible to do equipment which will collect fog. And the good news is that same equipment collects rainwater quite well.
Daniel Lotuno's fog collector was installed on his homestead in April. He says he does not regret spending the $850 for it.
When there is fog or some rain, there are some water that we collect. Definitely this shows that we get some water. Because when it was raining or there is fog, we still have to go to our fetching areas. But now, since there is a fog collection, then we have water.
And for the Lotunos and other Kiserian families, that water captured by this revolutionary device is making a major impact on daily life. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Kiserian, Kenya.
It's coming up at 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa. Sports, here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Nigeria met the deadline set by FIFA for the withdrawal of a court case in Jos, Plateau State, North Central Nigeria, on Thursday. The private legal action precipitated the removal of the duly elected Nigeria Football Federation executive from office. The sports ministry replaced the NFF executive with an administrator. FIFA construed this as government interference in the running of football and suspended Nigeria from international competition pending the withdrawal of the case and reinstatement of the NFF executive. Nigerian fans are now hopeful that FIFA will soon officially lift the ban on the country's participation in international competition. In Windhoek, the draws for the ninth edition of the Africa Women's Championships takes place in the capital, Windhoek, tomorrow Saturday. Algeria, Cameroon, Ghana, Ivory Coast, Nigeria, South Africa, Zambia, and hosts Namibia will be divided into two groups for the preliminary round-robin contest. Turning to athletics, Kenyan Olympic champion David Rudisha faces a stiff challenge from Ethiopian world champion Mohamed Aman, Botswana's Nigel Amos, and Sudan's Abubakar Kaki in 800 meters at the IAAF Diamond League in Monaco today, Friday. On-form Jairus Kipchoge Birech seeks to fend off his Kenyan compatriots Paul Kipsiele Koech and Brimin Kiprop Kipruto to maintain his winning streak in the 3,000 meters steeplechase. Kenyan world champion Asbel Kiprop aims to win his third consecutive 1500 meters at this annual event, but could be upstaged by South African Johan Cronier or Moroccan Abdelati Igida. Botswana's in-form Isaac Makwala sprints in 400 meters. Staying in Monaco, Ivory Coast's Muriel Ahore and Nigerian Blessing Okagbare clash in the women's 100 meters. South African Wenda Nell runs the 400 meter hurdles as Ugandan newcomer Winnie Nanyondo challenges Kenya's world champion Eunice Sum in 800 meters. Perhaps the most exciting clash in the women's events will be the East African showdown, where Ethiopia's Genzebe Dibaba and Almaz Ayana are pitted against Kenya's Mercy Cherono and Sally Jepkoskei Kipyego. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report on Monday. Our listener mail for this Friday morning comes from Aliou Sano of Juba in South Sudan. He says, "Dear VOA, please help me to tell the government of South Sudan that instead of buying $40 million worth of arms and ammunition to kill fellow South Sudanese that they are supposed to be protecting, I wish the said amount could have been allocated to help resettle the internally displaced people as well as pre-positioned food for the anticipated food shortage. Remember, the country's oil money should be used to improve the lives of South Sudanese, not to kill them." Thank you, Aliou Sano of Juba, South Sudan, and thank you very much for your comment. Please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. French President Francois Hollande warned that the Sahel region in Africa remains a security threat. His comments came Thursday in the Ivory Coast as an Islamist group claimed responsibility for a suicide bomber attack that killed a French soldier and injured six others earlier this week in northern Mali. That's it for this Friday, July 18th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing everybody a very good weekend.
Love African music?
Music time in Africa.
This is Heather Maxwell, and if you do, Music Time in Africa is the perfect show for you. Tune in to listen on the radio Saturdays and Sundays at 0900 2000 and 2100 UTC. You can also listen to the show day or night on the internet. Go to voanews.com and voaafrica.com and click on Music Time in Africa. You'll find past and present radio shows and a link to my blog, African Music Treasures. This is Africa through its own music. Oldies, classics, traditional music, Afropop, and fusion. You get it all right here in one beautiful bundle on VOA's Music Time in Africa.